You cannot be serious! That ball was on the line!
And ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.
こんにちは。This is Yu Vocal.
Shalom. This is Matt Cohen.
Welcome to Big Lens Fast Shutter, where we demystify the world of sports photography. So take that up your ass, whoever it is, computer. We have a couple of things that we need to talk about before we start. Nothing really serious. Matt and I would like to welcome all the newcomers who came probably via This Week in Photo, and would like to obviously thank Frederick Van Johnson, who had the balls to have us on his show. Hopefully everything went okay after that, and his reputation is not in tatters or anything like that. We really, really enjoyed being on TWIP, had a good time, and I hope we got to give out enough information to get you to come and listen to us talk. And only us. So no Fred, just us. The other thing we need to talk about, Matt, is the bit of an iTunes issue. I'm sorry, I'm giving you this like really no time to prepare, but just tell people what's going on, if there's anything we're going to do in the future with the whole Android and blah, blah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we will fix it. And in the meantime, there will always be a link to the MP3 on the website. I know it's not as convenient as being able to download it to your phone, but basically the software that we used was never updated for the newest OS, and it's causing us a bit of a hiccup. We're working to get it fixed, and we will get it fixed, but in the meantime, if you have any trouble downloading it, just go to biglensfastshutter.com. And each of the individual episodes will have their own blog post. And in that blog post, there will be a link where you can download the MP3, you know, either stream it or download it to your computer and move it over to your phone, and bear with us as we sort this out.
We will figure it out. Well, Matt will figure it out, because I'm not going to touch that crap. We are going to decide on the winner of the Golden Bib 2012. It's now being trademarked, so no one can use it anymore. And please go on and vote. We will have a link on this particular podcast for the link to the voting of Golden Bib. Your vote is not really going to count, because we're basically going to decide who the winner is, whether or not you like it or not. Interesting to see what the people's choice will be.
So this is kind of like the U.S. presidential election.
It is, pretty much, yeah. Because we're like, you know, the people who got a lot of money. And Republicans and all that kind of stuff just kind of, you know, put money in and say, hey, you're the winner. And that's it. Don't really count if you vote in droves. And if MTV is saying rock the vote, doesn't really matter. But it'll be fun to see if we agree to disagree with you. And we will give something to the winner. Matt and I are still thinking about it. Definitely probably won't be the Nifty Drive, because it's not going to work. The other thing is Podium 2012. And Matt is going to give something, but oh yeah, the winner's decided. No, it's done.
Yeah, the winners are up.
Oh wait, do you want to do like a drum roll thing?
The winner is Carlina.
Woo!
Ben CK was in second, and Sport Pick was in third. All of those guys participated quite a bit, which helped. There were some people that had, you know, more wins, but these guys were more consistent and had more points. So that's the thing. You got to enter every month if you want to win it at the end.
And a bit more house cleaning. I'm really sorry I have to do this now, because we've had 47, maybe 45 posts, 44 posts on Training Ground, which is the most we've ever had. And we are going to start having Training Ground, hopefully, if all goes well after this, because we're recording, and hopefully on YouTube from now on. You need to first put the tags that we ask you to tag from now on out. You have to tag your photos on Flickr. And second, if we ask you to take your photos out of Training Ground and put in Podium, please do so, because we won't talk about your photos from now on. We just won't, because there's too many good photos there that shouldn't be talked about. Because this is for training. If you're new to sports photography, or if you want to try something new that we talked about, that you thought like, oh, that's great, I'm going to do this panning thing, but I want to know like what Matt and Rue, you know, thinks about, we'll do that. But if it's a good photo, we'll send you straight to Podium, and that's it. I think that's only fair, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Matt agrees, and my cat is agreeing as well. So it's all good. And that's it. So should we go to news?
We should go to news, yeah.
And news?
Here at news, both Ryu and I will tell you our best and worst shoot of the previous month. And we talk about ourselves because we like to.
So please talk about you, Matt Cohen.
I will talk about me. I took a big part of the month off for my honeymoon.
Woo.
So I didn't shoot as much as normal, but I did shoot a bunch of college basketball, and I'm about 5 games in, and I finally got my basketball timing back, which is, I guess, a bit of news. I was struggling for the first couple of games because it's been one full season, so 2 years since I shot my last college basketball game. And it does take a little bit to get back into the swing of that. So finally getting some good stuff and looking forward to the rest of the season.
Wait, no bad stuff?
No bad stuff.
Really?
That's all I shot.
Well, you had a good month, huh?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I shot Manchester United in Old Trafford for the first time in about 3 years. Last time was Champions League match between them and Celtic when Nakamura was still playing. I forgot why that place is called the Theatre of Dreams, and it is a fantastic stadium with the atmosphere. I mean, FA Cup fourth round, it's like, you know, watching Lakers the Bobcats type of thing. Now, it's a really crappy game if you think about it, but completely full and just great atmosphere, fantastic place. I would love to go back again. And the Japanese played about 20 minutes, and so that was all good. Bad stuff? I don't know if I actually had a bad shoot this month. Oh yeah, I did. Basketball as well. Like I said before, I wrote on the blog before, my aim for this year is to get better at basketball because I think my basketball pictures suck. Like, it's horrible. So I want to get better at it and all the indoor sports that I'm kind of struggling here and there. And I did my first basketball over here in Berlin, the Alba Berlin. And yeah, it sucked. So I hope it's not going to continue sucking like Matt sucks for the first 5 games. So hopefully I'll get back up to speed or whatever speed that I had before. And well, that's it for news. In Masterclass, we pick a topic in sports photography and we discuss it front and back, plus someone. And this time we're going to be discussing about remote and remote cameras. And Matt, who do we have this time?
We're going to welcome back Mark Rebellis, who was with us in a prior episode. When Mark was on before, we talked a lot about motorsports, NASCAR, and drag racing. But Mark has extensive experience using remotes, so we thank him for coming back on to run us through how he uses them and kind of his philosophy of doing them, and then maybe a couple stories about how he's used them.
Right. Mark, you ready?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
So please tell us very, very briefly, what is a remote and what does it do?
The whole purpose of a remote camera is, usually it's to accomplish a photo from an angle that you couldn't take the picture from. So a lot of times that might be like a dangerous area where, like for racing, you might want to put a camera somewhere where you're not allowed to stand due to it being like a high impact area. Or for like basketball, you might want to put a camera on the backboard or up in the catwalks looking straight down on the basket. Once again, it's another angle that you can't get as a photographer. So the whole purpose of remotes is to get stuff you couldn't normally get, as well as to get stuff from multiple angles. Like, you could set up like 3 remotes at a baseball game all aimed at home plate, and you'll get the same shot from 3 different angles, which can be very beneficial when you have people like umpires moving around and you get your shot blocked and you could have the greatest play ever. But with your one angle, even though you did nothing wrong, you don't get the shot. So the whole point of remotes is so you can get the shot.
I've had some questions from people about setting up, but also about permissions as to like where and how you can put them up and if you need special permissions to put remote cameras up. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, a lot of the remotes, especially for something like basketball, you got to have permission from like the team photographer, the media director. Now here in Phoenix, I know all the team photographers, so remotes are pretty easy to do. It's most of the time it's just a matter of getting to the game early enough to set up the remote and make sure everything's good to go. Like an NBA game, sometimes you have to get permission from the league to do some things, like to put cameras on backboards and such. I don't really do backboard cameras just because it's such a hassle, but remotes definitely are very good things to have in your arsenal.
When you mean getting there early, how much time do you leave to get there to set it up and test it and make sure that you have it all set up before the players start getting out there?
Okay, that's the big thing. Before the players start getting out there is typically the rule, especially going back to NBA. To set up a catwalk camera, it literally takes me less than 10 minutes to do the whole process. But you have to do it before spectators arrive and before the players are warming up. So that usually means getting to the arena 2 hours earlier than I normally would for a game. So I try and save remotes for times where I really need it. Like, say it's a big game or an important player where I want to get some shots. Like whenever the Miami Heat come to town, I always want to get good shots of LeBron. So I'll set up a couple remotes just to increase my odds.
And what equipment do you exactly need to set up a remote?
All right. The basic equipment, obviously you need your camera and your lens. Then you're going to need a clamp to clamp it to wherever you're mounting it. Sometimes we'll use suction cup clamps if we're putting it on like a glass. Like sometimes with race cars, if we want to mount a camera on a hood, we'll use a suction cup. For most remotes, people use what are called magic arms and super clamps. And they're super, super strong, so you can mount it to any kind of like metal pole or object like that. In addition to that, you're going to need a trigger or a cable to go from your camera to your Pocket Wizard receiver, which is what most people use for remotes. And then you're going to need your safety cable. Safety cables are incredibly important because in the event that your clamp fails, if your camera falls down to the ground or, God forbid, hits somebody, your career as a photographer is pretty much over. So safety equipment to ensure your camera doesn't move is incredibly, incredibly important.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that you need to test before you ever even think about setting up a remote in a live setting. Before I did it, I had double safety cables, clamps, and arms set up all around my house, seeing how long they would stay up without anybody touching them, and then putting them on a table and moving the table around to see if it was rock solid. Even if it doesn't hit somebody, even if it doesn't cause any kind of damage, if your camera fell during a game and they had to take a time out to do that, even if it was at a college game or a high school game or something like that, nobody's going to let you do it again, and you're crushing your access. And that story is going to get around.
On top of if you do something that messes up and it gets remotes banned from the arena or wherever, which is a very good likelihood of happening if you do cause an issue, you're going to have to deal with all these other photographers that they're going to be pissed.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got to be a professional. I wouldn't necessarily say remotes are for beginners just because of all the logistics involved and making sure everything's perfect. If you want to do like remotes for beginners, start off at like local events and do stuff where it's not hanging over people. Another problem with remotes is they don't always fire like planned, so you don't ever want your remote to be your primary shot, because if it doesn't fire, you're going to look like a real idiot to your editors.
You just said it, remotes are not, it shouldn't be your primary shots. So remote shots are then used for, is it more like a just in case you don't get the shots you want with the camera that you have in your hands?
In a lot of cases, yes. Like what I said earlier about how sometimes a umpire will block my view when I'm shooting a play at the plate in baseball. If I have a remote camera on the other side of the play, then I'm guaranteed to get the shot, block two angles at the same time. I guess I could try.
So how do you know if you got a good shot with that remote camera setup? Do you only know at the end, or do you know that you, after a while, you kind of know like, oh, it's set up at this angle, so if I release it now, it should get a good shot?
Well, there's plenty of times where like you'll have a play and like I'll look on the back of my camera at what I got with my handheld, and you can kind of tell, yeah, that'll make a really good angle from the remote, or no, his face isn't looking the right way. But hold on, I lost my train of thought here. Ask me the question again so I can finish it.
All right. Let's pretend that like the past 10 seconds didn't happen. I'm quite curious.
I was going to hit you with a that's what she said joke there, but I decided not to.
Wow. That wouldn't have been out of character at all.
I'm going to leave that one in.
You can leave that.
I'll leave that one in.
Yeah, a lot of times at halftime, assuming it's a easily accessible remote, we'll grab our remotes at halftime, and so then we can download them and make sure everything looks good. But in a lot of cases, the remote's in such a hard place to get to that you don't know if you got anything until you go up and retrieve it like an hour after the game. That's always the most difficult walk in the world, is heading to my remote when I think I have something good. But you know, you just really don't know if the thing's going to fire or not. I've had some really bad luck over the years with my Pocket Wizards. They claim they have 1,000 feet of range, but there's times where I don't even get 100 feet of range. So you just better pray that your thing fired, because there's nothing worse than an awesome shot that your remote didn't get because it didn't fire. Nothing in the world is worse.
I want to know exactly how big of a memory card you would have to put inside your camera. Just so you know, if you have to leave the camera for the entire day, you'll still be okay with the remote camera being there for the entire day and you get all the shots you want.
That's always a constantly changing answer, just as all the quality of cameras goes up and memory cards get bigger and, more importantly, cheaper. Nowadays, I try not to have a remote without a 16 gigabyte card. Anything less than that, I'm just going to be worried. Basically, the biggest card you have, put that in your remote camera, because that's going to be the hardest camera to change. That would be my answer for that.
Do you put it at maximum file size for, you know, the size of the pictures and everything as well?
Yeah, for the most part, I do my shooting in JPEG fine. So like a 16 gigabyte card, I could probably fit 2,500 to 3,000 photos on. So that usually should get me through pretty much any event on Earth other than like the Super Bowl.
We wanted to get into a little bit more of the philosophy of when you use them and where you would put them. Earlier, you were talking about, you know, if there's a big team coming in or a famous player coming in, you want to be able to get as many different shots of that player as possible. But sometimes you do it for creative reasons also. Just you're not ever setting up an overhead camera just to get pictures of one guy. You're getting it for a certain look. Otherwise, you wouldn't get there that early and walk up in a catwalk to do it just to get one picture of LeBron. So walk us through different sports that you've used remotes for and what your thinking was and where you set up and why you did it.
Okay, let's start with baseball. Baseball is a sport where I do a lot of remotes. In baseball, there's basically two places you want to aim your remote. The main one that most people aim at would be home plate, because home plate is where people score. So that's obviously the important shots is. So home plate's a good place. You know where the action is going to be for the most part. So focus your camera pretty close to the plate itself and hope you get some action in there. The second place that people do a lot of remotes in baseball was aimed at second base, because that's where you get the acrobatic plays at second base where the guy's sliding and the guy's jumping over top of him. And that's a shot that you usually get, I'd say, 2 to 3 times a game. So that's your safe remote shot. That's where you're going to get the most bang for your buck on a remote. But a home plate remote's going to be that's the spot where you really want it, because that's where the story of the game changes. For basketball, we've talked about the catwalk remote. That's usually with a 300mm lens or a 400mm lens aimed straight down on the basket. So when players are going up for rebounds and stuff, they're looking up at the basket. Their eyes are looking right up at the camera, it looks like. So it gives you a really cool vantage point. You can do cameras on the backboards, which makes for a cool shot. That requires a little bit more work and getting there earlier in most cases. And then you can put remotes at the bottom of the basket, of the pole or whatever you want to call it, and that gives you a pretty cool angle. There's not too many angles you can do in basketball. Sometimes you can do side angles, but that's mostly for like NCAA tournament stuff, because they don't let you do remotes on the backboard. Motorsports is a great one for remotes, because that's where I like to do a lot of my remotes, because I can put my camera in dangerous places where the car might crash and I don't want to stand. Racing's awesome for remotes. Sometimes I'll even put them inside the race cars if I get permission from the driver. And remote's all about just getting a cool perspective. Everybody sees the normal shots from sporting events and they become normal and boring. But when you show the sport from a completely different angle that people don't see, that's what provides compelling images.
Yeah. Why don't you talk to us a little bit more about putting the remotes in the car? Because beyond the permission and the relationships that you have to get something like that, that seems like kind of a really tricky technical task to bolt it down enough so that you're getting clear pictures and not have it come down under, you know, what has to be quite a bit of stress.
Yeah, but like with drag racing, the cars accelerate with 5Gs. So if I was to use a full-size camera for something like that, the chances are the camera's not going to be at the car by the time it hits the finish line, or when it hits the finish line. And when the parachutes come out and they have 5 negative Gs, the camera might get launched in front of the car. So you definitely have to be worried about G-forces and stuff like that when it comes to onboard cameras. But nowadays with like GoPros and all the little cameras, it's a lot easier to throw one of those in there because they don't weigh that much, so they won't move as easily. So yeah, GoPros are a great way to do remotes these days. It's kind of ruined it for people like me who used to use real cameras for it. Because now anybody and their brother can do a cool remote after buying a $300 GoPro.
I had an experience with that last year. I was shooting a rodeo and I've kind of rigged up fisheye on the end of a monopod. and I hang off the chutes and get guys coming out of the, when the Bronc bucks up, and you can get some really good shots like that. And last year I was shooting from across the arena, and I got a guy in one of my pictures who was using a GoPro on the end of a monopod and basically just doing the same thing without having to have all the gear to do it. So I definitely sympathize with that.
I was going to say, if I was going on the topic of remotes, if I was going to go to a rodeo, I'd be definitely putting clamping a camera on the horns of a bull. I swear to God, I would. If they let me do it, I swear to God, I'll do it.
Yeah, that's probably the, you'd have better luck doing it on the helmet of the rider, because they're real sensitive about any, you know, anything touching the stock. But yeah, there's a lot of possibilities there.
Yeah, no doubt.
Do you kind of envision now that you said about the whole GoPro thing, a lot more people will be using remotes?
The thing that professionals will always have going for us, hopefully, is that the relationships that we build with the athletes and the organizations.
Yeah.
It's not like Joe Blow can't go to a rodeo with his GoPro or to a football game or baseball game and set up a remote camera. You got to have permissions, and you got to really enforce those rules. Otherwise, you're going to have like 50 photographers with GoPros mounted all over a stadium.
Well, in a lot of places, you have to show proof of insurance to set up anywhere that's going to be dangerous at all.
You would honestly think that, and I do have insurance, but most organizations have never asked or checked, especially pro sports.
Both Stanford and Cal up here, you have to show proof of insurance before you can set up a remote that could fall on anything.
It's definitely a good idea.
I've had a remote at my feet, like a real wide angle lens at my feet, and you don't have to show insurance for that. But like when I do a backboard remote, or if I strap it to the support pole or anything like that that could fall, you have to show liability insurance for that up here. I mean, I'm sure that it's not enforced everywhere, but a lot of places it is.
No, and that's a good idea, because once again, that keeps only the professionals doing that kind of stuff. You want people that have like that can answer to the consequences if something bad happens. So myself, I carry, it's either 3 or 4 million of liability coverage. $4 million coverage, and plus it covers 50 grand worth of camera gear, 20 grand worth of rentals, and so all that stuff, and it costs like $1,500 a year. It's super, super worth it, because I don't know if you guys heard, but about 4 years ago, I lost 14 grand worth of camera gear, remote camera.
Yeah, we wanted to get into that as well. I mean, that was viral. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere online without seeing that. So can you get into that a little bit?
I was shooting a small drag race in Bakersfield, California. It was a thing where I didn't even really have many clients, so I wasn't making much money being there. If anything, it was costing me money. And by the end of the trip, it definitely cost me money. But I had a remote camera set up in a high impact area. We had a 400 millimeter lens on a D700, and a race car went out of control and crashed into my camera. Unfortunately, the camera didn't get any good pictures of it because it was a 400 millimeter lens on it, so the camera was focused a couple hundred yards away. But the last picture I got on the remote is just a really out of focus dragster coming straight at the camera. It was bad. I had to run for my life because the car was coming at me. So after I get done running and I look up, I'm like, all right, I'm safe, I'm good, nothing's missing. I look up at the wall where my camera is supposed to be, and it's missing. At first, I'm like, well, maybe it just fell down, and then I see end of the lens of a 400mm 2.8 lens sitting in the middle of the track, which is pretty damn big, and then I just see parts of my camera scattered for literally 300 yards. The guy hit my camera at about 220 miles an hour with the parachute. The parachute's actually what grabbed the camera off the wall and sent it flying. The car had less damage than my camera gear. Let's leave it at that.
Oh. So if it wasn't for the parachute, you still would have had a partial remains of the 400.
Yeah, the car hit the wall right where my camera was, but the parachute went over and grabbed it from the top of the wall. Yeah, if the car had just hit the wall without the parachutes, the camera would have probably been fine, and I probably wouldn't have learned my lesson about insurance.
Well, as long as you didn't have to pay for the whole thing, it's okay.
Well, I kind of did, but I got plenty of years out of that camera stuff. So at the end of the day, it did so much more for my visibility and getting my name out there that I'd actually say it was worth happening.
Yeah, Mark has a pretty extensive blog post about it. We'll link that up on the post that goes up with this, because it's pretty interesting reading.
It was a tough day. I don't know how I didn't cry that day, but I held it together.
You did kind of mention a bit about people who want to get into remote and how they should probably start low-risk remotes, maybe remotes on the floor rather than having things up on the rafters or backboards.
Or go to like a local soccer game and put a wide-angle camera in the back of the net. That requires like very little skill. There's very little risk. That's a good intro to remotes, is stuff like a soccer goal remote.
And what's like a step after that?
A step after that would maybe be something like at a baseball game, a home plate remote or a second base remote, because now what you're dealing with is you're going to have your remote in an area where I could be hit by a foul ball. Luckily, I haven't had that happen to me. Granted, I'd rather have my remote hit by a foul ball than my head, so you got to keep that in. But no, at a baseball game, you may set up your remote like right in a spectator area, so then now you got to have faith that the spectators aren't going to unclamp your camera and steal it or turn it off.
innocently bump into it and mess the focus up.
That happens. Anytime a camera's in an area where spectators are really close to it, you want to keep an eye on it, but also, if possible, go up there and check on it periodically and make sure the focus isn't changing. You might even want to, for something like that, after you focus the camera, put it on manual. If you have a little bit of gaff tape the lens so it doesn't move.
That's really important for remotes, especially if you're not able to check on it, like with a backboard or a catwalk remote or something like that. You don't want a little fine vibration to throw something out of whack. Or I've had a backboard remote completely knocked out of whack because somebody slammed on it and it bounced the lens off the backboard. And you can kind of minimize the damage if you have it taped down, because at least the focus will still be where it was. Like, the camera might not be exactly where it was, but the focus will be. And if you have enough depth of field on it, you'll be able to still get some pictures out of it. But a lot of things go wrong, and basically your job is to set everything up so that the least amount of things can go wrong while you're doing it. And that
includes
the positioning and the focus. And if you have tape, like Mark was saying, tape the focus ring so that it's not going to move, and make sure that your safety cables are attached, and make sure that the magic arm is tightened all the way and that the clamp is in a position where it's not going to slip. Like I was saying, practice at home, because you need to know exactly what the gear is going to do under stressful conditions.
Another thing I'd really like to add is always be in manual focus with your remote. For some reason, I get a couple photographers a year they'll shoot me an email or come up to me like, I did this remote and every photo's out of focus. How do you know where to put the focus sensor so the camera can autofocus? I'm like, no, you never want to autofocus with remote, because then you're relying on the subject to be perfectly in the center or perfectly where you think they're going to be. And most of the coolest photos you're going to get with a remote is something's going wrong or somebody's not where they're supposed to be. So always manual focus your remotes.
And where do you focus? You know, I guess it depends from baseball to basketball to motorsports, but where do you kind of just do it like from practice and from experience? Like, you know, like, okay, I'm going to focus it here because usually they come around here at this time, that kind of stuff.
Mainstream sports like baseball and basketball and that kind of stuff, you know where everybody's goal is. Like, they're in basketball, they're trying to go in the hoop, and you know where they're aiming. So, like, that makes it easier to do a remote. Now, for a sport like football where it's all over the place, you really can't do remotes. Every once in a while, people will do, like, a elevated remote, like, aimed at a corner of an end zone. Like, Sports Illustrated for the Super Bowl, they might have four remotes aimed in each of the four end zone corners, because they have the ability to do that. But football is a sport that's really tough to do remotes, just because you don't know where the action's going to be. And to do good remotes, you kind of have to have a pretty good idea where it's going to happen. Also with remotes is a lot of the stuff that I'm shooting is indoors. So I'm stuck at f2.8. So you don't have that benefit of the additional depth of field, which I would normally recommend. Like, if you're doing something outside, like a soccer goal remote, sometimes you can go f8 or even f11 and just raise up your ISO a bit. But when you're inside and you're already in dark light, when you're doing a remote at 2.8, it definitely becomes a lot harder, because your focus area is so tight that you've got to pray that the action happens right where you're focused.
Yeah, because a matter of inches and it's useless.
Yep. 400 millimeter lens at f2.8, the area of focus is not that big.
Yeah. Inches, a matter of inches.
Yes.
So far, your best remote shot in terms of creativity, in terms of luck, in terms of everything, what was like one of your really favorite remote shots?
I have a couple. One that I really feel put me on the map in sports photography was in 2004. I did the Summer X Games. I was working for ESPN Magazine, And I got the crazy idea. I wanted to put a full-size camera. This was before GoPros, mind you. So I wanted to put a full-size Nikon camera with super clamp on the handlebars of a motocross rider's bike, one of the guys that does the tricks, like the backflips and all that stuff. So we found a rider. When I was working for ESPN, when you go up to a rider, you're like, hey, I work for ESPN. Can I put a camera on your bike? There was nobody saying no.
Right.
We did that and ended up producing just a pretty badass photo. The first couple times that this was during a practice before the event, the first couple jumps he took, I don't know if it was the first or the second, but he landed so hard that it broke the super clamp. Luckily, my assistant had an extra one and ran down there and changed it out, and we were able to get the shot. But anyways, that shot on the handlebars kind of put me on the map in sports photography. I was just getting out of the military around them, trying to make a career out of this. So by doing that camera, it ran as a two-page spread in the magazine, and it really helped out my career. People started to realize that I could do some abstract type shot. Another good remote I did was also at the X Games. We put one on the back of a snowmobile. The snowmobiles are very heavy and they land really hard. So a super clamp wasn't going to work for this. It would have just moved or broke something. It wouldn't have worked. So what we ended up doing is using zip ties. I had my assistant Guy Rhodes from Chicago. He's an awesome photographer, awesome assistant. We used zip ties to zip tie the camera on some bars on the back. And then for some padding, I took my glove off. And I put my glove between the camera body and the chassis of the snowmobile. Wow. And I told the guy not to do any backflips because I just didn't think it was going to be a cool shot. I wanted him to be like doing like Superman tricks. The first trick out, the guy does a backflip. I'm like, whatever, that's not the thing. The backflip shot was the only shot. Everything that I suggested he do for good pictures was garbage. Wow. So I'm glad that he did his random trick. You just never know what's going to look good with remote. Got one more good story.
Oh yeah, give it
tell us. Tell us now. I'm sitting down. Go ahead.
It's not a crazy story, but it's a good story about remotes. About 4 or 5 years ago, I got permission from the Diamondbacks baseball team to go up in the catwalks there. And the catwalks at a baseball stadium are way higher than anywhere else. It's I think it's 15 stories above the field. Really big. But anyway, so I mounted my camera up there for a baseball game, aimed straight down on home plate, hoping for like a really cool play at the plate. I think I did it like 2 days in a row and didn't get nothing. And this was like the eighth or the ninth inning of the game. One of the technicians, you have to be escorted up there. He took me up there. I'm pulling my card out from the camera. I'm going to leave the camera up there because there's one more game the next day. I pull the card out and we're walking back to head back downstairs to the field. And I noticed that there's a runner on second or third with one out. So I asked the guy, I'm like, hey, do you mind if I put this back in? So I actually go back there and I put the camera in, or I put the card in the camera, and I'm sitting there with the pocket wizard in my hand, like a foot away from my camera, and the guy gets a hit and the guy's running home. So I'm like standing there an inch away from my remote camera, pushing the button, and I nailed a great shot at the plate of a play, and it ended up being a two-page spread in ESPN. So that was another remote that really made me happy. After I did that, then a bunch of people started doing that remote. So now it's something that nobody really does anymore, because once you nail it, you don't really need to do it again for a while.
Right.
Mine ran two-page spread in ESPN, and then one of the other photographers, my buddy Christian from Getty, he got a two-page spread in Sports Illustrated. So once you've knocked out Double Trucks in the two biggest sports magazines, there's no point in doing the shot for a while.
Yeah, because they're not going to run them again. Even if you get a great shot, you know, a month later, they're still not going to run it because they don't want to have all their pictures looking the same.
Yeah,
exactly. It's such a unique angle that if you use it more than a couple times, it becomes very redundant. It's like overused fisheye lens.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you for coming on. And this is going to help our listeners a lot because there has been quite a lot of questions about remotes. Do you have any plugs on your side?
I just recently updated my blog, markjrabilis.com/blog. I've gone to bigger photos, full retina quality images. So it looks really good. So I definitely would like some of you guys to check out my website and let me know what you think.
Yeah, we'll link that up in the post that goes up with the podcast for sure.
Cool. I guess you guys want me to send you over some remote shots to include in the podcast?
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah.
And if you, by any chance, like get any of your remote cameras destroyed from now until, like, I don't know, when we post this podcast, and let us know and send us that picture as well.
All right, I'll do my best. One remote I'm working on, I don't know if I would call it a remote because it's with a GoPro, but recently I've become obsessed with fishing. So a couple weeks ago I was in Florida and I took a GoPro and I tied it on the end of my line. And I was casting as far as I could, basically trying to get a cool aerial shot of the boat surrounded by like mountains and cool stuff. So that's my next remote I'm working on is a fishing remote. I'm a weird guy with too much time on my hands.
Yeah.
Fishing remote. No, if you ever get that, Don, and if you get a good shot of that one, then yeah, definitely let us know because we'd like to actually see that.
I wouldn't have told you guys about it if I didn't plan on nailing it. So I'll definitely send it to you when I
get. Excellent.
Mark, thank you very much. And what is it? Have a great weekend. No, the Monday just started. It feels like a weekend.
He's headed to the Super Bowl.
All right. So have a great time at Super Bowl then.
I plan to. It should be a good time. Thanks, guys.
You Win is part of the show where you, the listeners, participate in a monthly themed competition. The top three photos will be presented on our site. And this month, what were we asking our lovely listeners to do? Matt Cohen.
We're trying to find out what people learned from us last year. And a little bit disappointed in the turnout because I know for a fact that there were a lot more people that learned a lot more things. So I don't know if people hesitant to put their work up there, but if you're moving along, if you're getting better, if you're taking our advice, then you should be participating, not just in Training Ground, but in Podium, and You Win also, because you will not get more confidence until you put your pictures up against other people and see what you need to do and listen to us tell you what you need to do. So please enter. Having 10 people enter or whatever is not enough. And like I said, we've seen better pictures from people who have gotten better from listening to the show. So more entries next month.
And we're just going to have a little bit of comment for all the photos that's been entered. We're not going to do this ever again because we're always going to choose top three and that's it. But I think it deserves a bit more of, okay, you've done well, you've not done well. And like you need to go and re-listen to all our podcasts. So we're going to start with Javelin04 with the, what Matt said, a very standard celebration shots, and that's exactly that. There's nothing interesting about this shot except for the fact that he's celebrating.
So looking at it, you can tell that there are things going on in the background. The losing goalie is on his knees. The other player who's on his team is celebrating. So this should have been wider. You know, obviously you want the impact of the celebration, but there was more stuff going on in the background and this should have been wider to show that. So
I think it's just one of those things that you kind of, you've gone into very safe mode of trying to get the guy who's celebrating and the goalies and other people who are down because they just got scored. Like Matt said, go wide or go really close. Like you want to see the guy's mouth and you know, spit flying, whatever. Like get it more, you know, make it more interesting. Like that's what we're trying to get out of this whole, let's get everything in there for the sake of just getting it in. So you need to really think about these things a lot more because we're not teaching you to be, I don't know, average here. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to make you excellent, fantastic sports photographer. And kind of same goes along with the Jay Rashes thing as well. Like, what the?
Yeah, so it's a remote basketball shot and it's good as far as it goes, but there's not a whole lot of impact here because it's just a layup. Like, yeah, it's nice that the guy's looking up and you get the light on his face, but there's nothing, there's no hook in this picture that draws you in, that makes this picture memorable. I guarantee you that if you stick with this, this picture will very soon start to look like a throwaway to you. So not discouraging you from using remotes, but you're going to have to figure out how to get higher impact pictures with it.
Yeah. It's boring. And you'll hopefully get some, ideas, whatnot, from our masterclass. And we're going to move to Kenneth. No, I like it.
Yeah.
It's very surreal in a way, you know, because you're so close to the touchline. And is it touchline or sideline?
Sideline.
You call it sideline. We call it touchline here. Yes. I find it very interesting because it is really, really surreal. I don't like the bit of color as well. Also, the composition. I don't really see this many type of, you know, shots in football. And you can see clearly see the people kind of scrunching their faces and whatnot.
Yeah.
So not his best.
This is a unique picture. It's not Kenneth's best, but this is rare. You don't usually see a wide picture like this so close. But, you know, he got low and he's as close as he can get. It's, you know, it's not bad.
Elroy, yes, we told you to sort out your access, but we didn't tell you to take a substandard photo and post it over here either. Like I keep on saying, not just me, but Matt also as well, but we are not looking for a pass-fail thing in this. Like we're looking for good and bad. Like we want good more than anything else. So great, you got access. Why this photo? Like what's the point? What am I supposed to be looking over here? And I don't really see anything that is worth it, you know? And I think you could do a much better job than this one.
If you're going through the trouble of lighting extreme sports like this, then you need to make it more dramatic and put the light exactly where it needs to be. You want light on his lower body because it's completely being lost into the ceiling, which is also bad because there's a pipe and then the fluorescent lights in there. So we get it. This is not obviously an ideal place to shoot, but this is where the things that you're shooting are. So you need to use them to minimize the disadvantages and maximize the advantages of shooting there. If you're allowed to bring lights in, then do something better with the lights than this. Be honest with yourself. What is this picture saying? Is this the most insane thing that ever happened on this half pipe? What's the hook? What are you trying to say with this picture? And I don't see any of that. So those are things you need to think about.
Bashar, I saw this the first time back in August because I thought this was really posted in Podium or You Win, but it wasn't. It's a great shot.
Yep.
And it's really interesting. And there's a lot of things going on here. I think some might say, like, well, how do you know it's sports? But kind of have to insinuate it's a sports picture. You know it's a field sports. You know it's most probably a long jump or a triple jump or anything that has to do with sand. And you know when it's landed and whatnot. It's a lot of action, a lot of sand, a lot of movement. The skin of the athletes is a black guy. It makes it a lot better, I think, in this situation than a white guy. And it's good. It's exciting.
Yeah. I like how the light is cutting through the sand, cutting through his fingers, the bit of the spandex in the background. It's good. Yeah, this is a good shot.
Keith, it's a very kind of standard, you know, panning thing. I think it's a bad moment, really.
I think it's a little bit unfortunate because of the official who's sitting there and the white poles that are in the background. And when you have something like that, the only choice that you have is to drop the shutter down so low that you can't tell what those things are. I like this picture because in all the motion, even though the shutter speed wasn't slow enough, he still froze the face and didn't freeze anything else. And that's good. So what comes from this is you either need to really go with it and drop the shutter way down, or shoot from a different angle where all you have in the background is the crowd, or stand on the other side if you can, or do something to remove those distractions from the background because they are really killing the picture.
Good effort, but I think you could have done it, you know, better. Cervello is horrible.
I don't understand what was supposed to have been learned, but this isn't it. And, you know, I don't want to come down too hard, but did enter this into You Win. This is a training ground shot that we would go off on in training ground. So the bar is way higher here and this did not clear it.
And Russ Ballmer.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty and everything, and I like the symmetry and the geometry of it all, but there's no subject. I mean, you either want there to be a play going on or a player walking off the field carrying his helmet or something like that. The team huddled around the coaches 40 yards away or whatever is not enough to make this really a picture at all. The one thing I do want to point out, and people should understand this, there was care that went into composing this picture. Russ forgot that there needs to be a subject to the picture, and I'm sure that he will not make that mistake again after hearing this. But look at how the lines line up. Look at where they're going. Look at the horizon being perfectly horizontal, row of clouds, goalposts, you know, even the lighting pole. You need to consider all this stuff. Like, if this picture had been, you know, if he just, oh, I'm just going to take a picture of the sky and he was standing up and camera's crooked or whatever, it would be a lot more annoying than it is. So put this kind of care into your pictures, but then make sure there's a subject.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a very, very audacious, really brave way to go about it. But yes, I wish there was something happening on the right-hand side, field goal, players leaving, something, or maybe even coming towards you so you get a bit of a depth going on as well. Also, the lines, I like them, but there's that bit of a green left on that side, which I don't really like. That really kind of bothers me. Get it down to the point that there is a beginning and an end, but it ends at the edge and not little green left towards, you know, on the left. So yeah. Effort good, execution bad. I know who my top three are. Wow, it's kind of slim pickings on this. Okay, number three. Oh, number three. Number three.
Number three is the long jump or triple jump, the kid.
Yeah, I agree. Number two.
Number two is Kenneth.
Oh my God, really? Yeah. We're going to have the same?
I mean,
it's not a good start of the season, huh? Okay.
I think it's pretty clear this month. And then obviously Bashar wins.
Yeah, so Bashar is the winner. And it's a great, great picture. You guys should learn more from Bashar and more from us. And give us a bit more. We We now have a statement from our wonderful Jewish Matt Cohen.
We do this podcast to share the knowledge that we've gained. And speaking for myself, lots of people helped me get better as a sports photographer. And because of that, I feel a certain responsibility to do the same for people who are serious and people who put in the effort and people who want to get better. Over the last couple of months, I've heard from a few of our listeners completely independently. None of them knew that anybody else was talking to me. And they've emailed me or chatted with me about an experienced baseball-only photographer who they've talked to or emailed and asked questions, and they've been blown off fairly rudely from what I understand. Had this story not matched with my own experience, I probably wouldn't have noticed it, but it does exactly match with my experience with this guy. So we're going to rewind to about 5 years ago. I was preparing to shoot my first San Francisco Giants game. It's a big deal. Think about shooting your first pro sports game or your first certain sports, you know, your first football game, your first baseball game. It's a big deal and you're nervous. So I spoke with my mentor about it. This guy's a photo editor and a former newspaper photographer, SI photographer. Been doing this for a long time. And he ran down all the things to keep in mind while I was shooting and then said, if you run into Brad Mangin, introduce yourself. Tell him I'm helping you out and ask him about the specific rules at AT&T Park. He's been around a long time and he knows the rules and he shoots a lot of baseball. Well, as fate would have it, I found myself in the third base well sitting next to Brad Mangin. And I introduced myself between innings. And I mentioned to my mentor who it was and asked him what the deal was with getting from the third base well to the first base well, which I could not figure out by myself. And the answer I got was a 5-minute monologue on why I shouldn't be allowed to shoot because he didn't like the company I used to shoot for or spec shooting in general. And when he was done with that, he took some jabs at my mentor and the company that he used to work for. Never did get an answer, even the beginnings of an answer to that question. I haven't had any dealings with Brad since then. I don't shoot much baseball, and he only shoots baseball, I think because he can sit in a chair the whole time. But I've heard about him trying to get another photographer kicked out of the Coliseum for crime of drinking out of the dugout water fountain and other questionable moves. We have a lot of mutual friends, so I mostly kept my mouth shut about all of this. But I don't like seeing young photographers that we're trying to help getting shit on. I feel that you have a professional responsibility to make sure that the craft of sports photography is passed along, especially when you play the social media game. And yes, Brad, who longs for the days of film when far fewer people could shoot, is all over Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and probably some others. But social media is a two-way street. You can't constantly pump your work out and then be rude or ignore the people who consume it, at least not without getting called out for it. Our goal here is to teach people how to think about and shoot sports pictures differently. No one is going to listen to our podcast and read our posts and be able to go out and shoot soccer exactly like Ryu or rodeo exactly like I do. Our vision, skills, experience will always differentiate us. If you're a professional like Brad Mangin who thinks that you're holding off the competition by blowing them off, I have two things to say to you. You're probably not as good as you think you are. And second, there will always be someone coming up behind you, whether you're willing to help them out or not. So Brad, in the interest of equal time, if you think I have this all wrong, please come on our show. We'll interview you and sort it all out. But until then, this is where we stand.
And with that, we end the 24th episode of Big Lens Fast Shutter. Special thanks to Boutsman, aka Arvin Batista, for the icons, and myself for doing the editing. Can't do this without them. To check out their info as well as ours, please check out biglensfastshutter.com. See you next month, and if you're interested in helping us out in editing this wonderful podcast, please let us know.
Take him out, son. I mean that. Take him out.